Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it.
Bonjour, bonjour.
Hello, hello. It's actually half term for me now.
I mean, actually, do you know what? Not oh no, I've got to reframe it because I actually had one of the nicest half terms with them.
Did you?
I tell you what. It was really brilliant having the balance of being with them in the mornings and actually doing quality, you know, activities or just arts and crafts or bike riding, whatever it was, and then leaving them at 1 o'clock. Then they were in, you know, childcare in the afternoon. And I just felt like I spent, you know, we always talk about quality rather than quantity. Mm-hmm. And on Saturday, I had the most beautiful day where Doz took Isla to the football to see Spurs play. And I just had Luna and Kit. We did like colouring in, we made their pancakes, we went to the cinema, we went for a walk, and then we just cuddled up on the sofa and they were just on me the whole day and I loved every moment of it.
So I feel
like I got it right this half term.
Because I feel like, well, I don't know, I'm day one. I'm not going to get ahead of myself. But I feel like I think when you're in half term, you can feel like, you just want to moan and vent because you're like, oh God, I've got so much to do. But actually this half term, I've done what you kind of did where I'm getting up early. Obviously work for myself, so I do have a bit of flexibility. I'm getting up early. I'm going, like, doing my exercise. Went for a run with James this morning. Then we're getting into the office at like 7:30, the office in our garden. And then we're not like commuting. And then I'm working until, I know, well, it's really not if you see it. And then we're working till maybe like 3:30. Well, I'm working till about 3:30 and then having a couple of hours with the kids in the afternoon. So I'm trying to do that Monday to Wednesday. And then Thursday and Friday, I'm going to try and have like days with them. Full days.
You should take them to the balloon museum in London.
Do you know what? I'm so torn. So many people say it's like hell and they're like, I don't go. And then like you like loved it. Lots of other people loved it. So maybe I will. I'm actually taking Axel and his friend on Friday to a restaurant in London, which is it's called Entrecote, and they just bring steak and chips constantly. Have you been? Yeah. It's literally just steak and chips.
No, because I don't like steak, but it would be my idea of hell.
Yeah,
but I've heard it's really good. Dozer loves it.
Yeah, so we're going to do that. And so maybe we will do something like that or go on like, I don't know, go on like a riverboat or I don't know, something.
Yeah, lovely. I think what you should do is just take, like, it seems like you've got it sorted. For anybody listening that doesn't have it sorted, take a deep breath. Take every single day as it comes and just as much as possible, feel all the feels, because you know what? We put this post up, didn't we, last week about half term, and it wasn't about spending time with the kids, because spending time with our kids is fucking amazing, right? Sometimes and sometimes not so amazing, but it's more the pressure that I think we put on ourselves to have stuff in the diary, scheduled in, things booked, you know, are we doing this? And then some days it's absolutely fine to go for a walk around the block or go to the local park, you know, have a bit of food and just sit down and watch a film with them or whatever it is. You don't always have to be out doing stuff all the time. Remember, it's their holiday as well. A teacher messaged us and said, I'm really, really concerned about the amount of overstimulation that they have during their holidays, that actually they are on a holiday. they need to sit down and rest.
Exactly. They need a rest. Like we all say towards the end of term, you know, the middle of term, the kids start looking absolutely shattered. And yeah, they do. They just need some days at home. Like they need to just like, I mean, stuff I don't normally let them do, like for instance, just lay on the sofa and Axel play his Nintendo Switch or just watch TV. Stuff that they wouldn't normally do for hours, they actually don't have time to do, I will let them do in the half term.
Yeah.
Because that's, I mean, God, how like how lovely would that be for someone say to you, just go and lay on the sofa and read a magazine? You'd be like, yeah.
Oh my God. Do you know what? I'm actually taking this afternoon off work and I'm going to go up to Fox Hills and I've put myself in to have a massage. I'm having a massage. I'm going to sit in the spa as well.
Oh my God, that is a great idea. You know what? I was thinking about this at the weekend. I was thinking, if I was single and with no kids, right?
Love where this
with
is
no
going.
Kids, yep. I think that would be my luxury. Like every Sunday, go and have a massage and lay in the spa. Why are all these single people with no kids not doing that? I don't understand. Why are they not doing that? What's the reason? I can't get my head around
it. They're out on a Sunday trying to, they're down the ship in Wandsworth getting shit-faced trying to find Mr. Right. I'm joking. I don't know. I've got no idea, but they should be. That's
they
for sure.
They should. They definitely should.
We need to get into today's podcast because I know we always say this, but I've got to be honest with you, George. This was one of my favourites.
Yeah, me too.
What and a actually, beautiful conversation.
Yeah, and the first time I think I've cried on a podcast or cried ever.
George.
Probably first time I've cried for a year, maybe. And I'm not even joking. Like, I'm not, that's not an exaggeration.
This is one of the reasons why it was such a special, beautiful, important conversation because Georgia, like, if I was with you now, I'd give you the biggest hug in the world. You were super vulnerable. You opened up, you shared something with us that was obviously hugely important to you. So really grateful for that. Stick around for that moment because it's really important. I think it was a really important process for you as well to discuss it.
Yeah, it definitely was. And it's a timely conversation because it's a conversation that's coming up a lot in my family at the moment. I don't go into like huge details on who it's about, but definitely alcohol is a difficult subject in our family at the moment for, you know, various reasons. And it was, I really needed actually to have a chat like that and just to kind of let it all out because I am the strong one. Like I'm the one who keeps it all together and chats through rationally and like all of that kind of stuff. There's always my role almost. And so it was nice to just not have to do that and just to listen and yeah, just like validate what's going on rather than having to not put on appearances. I don't mean that, but like try and hold everyone together and keep positive just to think, actually, no, this does affect me and I am upset by it and it does upset me and it does affect me. Do you know what I mean? And I think anyone who has, you know, experience of all addiction actually and substance abuse, it does really affect the family and often it's not the family who is the focus, it's the person. So yeah.
Well done. You were so brave, George. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Today's conversation, our guest has been to the edge of a cliff and back, as in experienced the worst grief that a parent could ever feel, hit rock bottom, turned his life around, and has a really wonderful message and a story to share with us today. I already feel emotional. I think you guys are going to absolutely love it. Georgia, let's get into it. Who are we talking to today?
We are chatting to the absolutely incredible, like we just love this episode, Matt Pink.
Joining us on the podcast today, someone who has been on the most incredible journey, a journey involving probably one of the worst grief known to man, I'll be honest, turned his life around. He is now a coach to help other people. He's building an amazing community of sober humans on the Dry app, which he co-founded. On Instagram, you'll know him as Better Life Guy. It's Matt Pink on the podcast.
Yay.
I should say father to four as well.
I know. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, add that to the list.
Yeah.
Father of four. yeah, trying to change the whole world.
Just small thing.
Learn how to ski.
Oh God, we didn't. I need to rewrite my intro.
Exactly. Learning how to ski should be a key thing in that intro. But listen, we've got a big conversation to have today. But tell us, how are you this morning? What's your morning been like?
I am fabulous. Honestly, I've never been happier in my whole life. I'm so excited about life in general. I've been putting out content every day, just like some sort of excited kid since January the 1st. January is my favourite month. I go against the grain when it comes to that because I get new goals, new pad of paper. New things to talk about, new like opportunities, and I've been smashing it fitness wise, health wise, and I just feel like honestly incredible. And so many people are doing dry Jan,
yeah.
So I'm feeding off their energy as well, and I'm watching people's lives change, and people around me like, it's quite good, this January thing, isn't it? I might stick it in February. I'm like, go on.
Come on. I've got to be honest with you, I've been watching some of your videos on Instagram, and the positivity is beaming off you. Yeah. In those videos.
And that's, do you know what? Like sometimes I get accused of like toxic positivity because people are like, how can you be so positive all the time? It's not that easy. I'm like, but that's just me. Like you meet me today. Like that's how I am.
Yeah.
I love it. And I know how much I've been in the depths. And I think the thing that motivates me is if I've been through all the shit, can I swear on here?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Fucking swear. Go for it.
If I've been through all the shit I've been through and I can turn my life around to feel this good, then hopefully that's going to inspire people that are maybe having a bad day at work. And
yeah.
You know, they can reflect on what sort of I do. Mm. And I just genuinely do love it. That's how I am. And I'm only just getting started as well, 4 years into it. And I'm just, I can't wait to see where I get to in 10 years.
You just mentioned there that life hasn't always been this positive and you haven't always had this real lease for life. Do you want to just take us back and I guess tell us how and when and why your life changed so much?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty tragic story as you sort of alluded to, but essentially, cutting a long story short at the start of it, I was married. I was working in the West End in the fashion industry and I had a really good job and I was getting free clothes and I was going to fashion shows and I was doing loads of drinks and doing loads of drugs and meeting loads of girls and you know, all the stuff that I got into it for essentially. And I was living the life. And then I started to get a bit older and I settled down and I still had that job and I met someone and you know, got married, had a child. And life started to sort of pan out the way I was hoping for. Like, I had a really exciting job in town, but I was a nice life out of town where I was married and, like I said, had a daughter in 2009 and then had a son in 2012. And so it sort of had this life, 2.4 children, happily married, happy job, earning good money, bought my first house. And everything was like, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I was also obviously drinking a lot and I was sniffing a bit of gear, as you do, sort of most people do in the West End.
Yeah.
It's a massive thing. If I still say it and people are like, really? Is that big a deal? I'm like, yes. Everyone does it. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere. So what happened was I was out for a bike ride on I started cycling, trying to be a bit fitter because I was getting the old dad bod. And I came home from a 30-mile bike ride and there was an ambulance outside my house and my wife at the time was running across the lawn like with a baby in her arms. I was like, what the hell's happened?
Oh, God.
And then she was obviously screaming, the ambulance people were like going mad and I just ditched my bike. I was like, and they were like, he's not breathing. So I was like, what? And like, he was perfectly happy, fine baby. He was 4.5 months old. So got in the car and followed the ambulance to the hospital and watched just the most horrendous few hours of my life while they tried to resuscitate him and he died like on the spot. He was already dead when I saw him. And it was a cot death or sudden infant death syndrome, which I didn't really know anything about, you know, but it was, and also he was 4.5 months old.
Oh
and
my God.
Kind of think like you're out the woods by then.
Yeah,
definitely.
Everything changed like overnight. You don't get taught how to deal with that level of grief.
No.
And I've been fortunate in that I hadn't really had that much grief other than like your grandparents or whatever. So that was my first taste of it. So.
How do you begin to piece your life back together after something like that?
You don't really. You just think, it's so mad, like the headspace you go into, because it's a new area of your whole like mind. You're like, what do I do now? And it's really weird because you look at your wife and you're like, you look for support in her and obviously she's broken.
Yeah.
And you look to your parents for support and then they're broken.
And what about your daughter?
And you look at her and think, well, she still needs parents. She still needs me to earn money and live the life. And so you look at her and think, shit, and you're just faced with this like conflict of like, what do I do? And I was fortunate enough, I was working at the time for a really good brand and they put me into a really good counselling team in central London.
Right.
But I sat in there and I was like, this ain't doing nothing for me. I don't want to talk to you. I don't give a shit about what you're saying to me. I don't want to tell you anything about him or my life. And it was too soon, I think, on reflection. Mm. They were trying to do the right thing, and that was all. And then once that failed, because you know, again, I don't know what you do. And it's really weird because there's even things like there's I could go I talk about this for ages, but I won't because it's morbid. But even when you get back from hospital after he died, like, what do you do now? Like,
exactly.
What happens that
what
day?
Do you do? Yeah.
And also the police.
Yeah, do you
were
put
my
on
house.
The TV? Like, what do you do when
the police,
you come home?
The police had cordoned off my house. So I had to sit on the lawn outside my own house. I wasn't allowed in because they were checking that. Obviously, their first port of call is they have to check there's no foul play or whatever. And that's the stuff that you just don't get taught. And then you have to sit there for hours. And you just think, what do I do? And so someone told me the best course of it. And I had some friends that lost their son, who was a friend of mine. And they told me that the best thing was, like, time is the only healer. You can't really do much about other than time. And I remember thinking at the time, right, you're broken. I don't want to do counselling. I've got to go and earn money. So time is the thing I need to change. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what's easy when you to pass time? And I thought, drinking and sniffing, that passes time really quick.
Mm. You can lose days doing that.
Yeah, exactly. And I did. And I went straight down that route and ended up sort of hanging on to my job. For years, I did the London Marathon in 2015 for him, which actually gave me a focus. It gave me a bit of a reprieve. I had like a 6-month training session for that. I did that. And as soon as I crossed the finishing line, I was like, fuck that. Like, fuck running. I'm done, like, straining myself. And now I'm going to go and self-destruct.
And how many years that was 2015. How many years since your son had passed away?
He was born in 2012 and died in 2013, April. Mm-hmm. Almost 2 years later.
And was your drinking ramping up at that stage?
Yeah, I remember quite early sort of thinking, is there drink in the fridge? If there wasn't, I was making sure there was drink in the fridge. Like, and I hadn't ever really been like that.
Did you know you had a problem? Like, in your head, did you know that it was a problem, or had you not realised that?
No, I didn't know it was a problem until recently. Like, because you look around, if someone's kid dies in a movie, what's the first thing they do when they get home? They get this random bottle of whiskey out and pour a drink, or a TV program, or anything that happens, you just think that's what you do. So you don't know anything other than that. So I wouldn't have said I had a problem at all. And I wasn't even drinking, I wasn't going mad, really. I was drinking just a bit more. But my drinking before that happened was like a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, kind of a regular drinker, really. Chuck in the odd fashion show and the odd late night and the odd party. Yeah. I was pretty normal. But I wasn't like someone who woke up on a Monday and was looking forward to a Monday night bit. I'd still go to the gym, I'd go for a run, I was doing stuff.
Yeah, so it's just part of the circle of what we do as humans, right? So it's like, gym, relationship, drinking water, drinking alcohol, eating food. It just all slots into what we have normalised.
Yeah, I was going to say, in your head, that feels balanced.
Exactly.
In a weird way.
But what I just let more into that because that's easier, quicker, required less effort and numbed me out. And I thought at the time, again, now that I know not to be true, but I thought it was helping me sleep. Obviously, that's another thing that you think, how do I sleep when that's happened? Like, you shut your eyes and you're just like, that ain't going to happen. So you then rely on alcohol to knock you out.
What was your, obviously, I mean, your wife's grief, very, very personal to her, but was she responding in the same way as you with the, were you guys drinking together, drinking separately? Was that something that just you were doing? And what was going on in the relationship at the time?
We didn't really, we drank together, but we would cry together when we drank together. So it was more like, I was probably distancing myself from reality. Right, so like, my job was, like, as much time as I wanted to be in town, I was in town. So I tended to spend more time in town just to avoid being in the house.
Yeah.
So I'd spend more time in the bars after work or whatever. So she would deal with it in her own way. But her way wasn't particularly as much through drinking as mine was.
Right.
So
how was she coping? Like, was she talking to you or talking to friends or?
Yeah. It was just awful. Like, none of us, we didn't cope. And we split up. Yeah, we split up in, I don't know, 5 years after. Right. It took that long to sort of just drift apart. And, you know, there's a crazy stat, like 95% of people that lose a child split up.
Yes.
Some mad stat like that.
It's really hard, George.
And you don't realise that. Again, and I didn't know that till afterwards. But, yeah, we just drifted apart because you can't rediscover that, really. I think it's just become so fractured and you look at each other and just remind each other of him.
It's the memory, isn't it?
So you're drinking day to day, staying in town longer, your marriage breaks down, you're sofa surfing. Was that rock bottom?
Yeah, my rock bottom came... My rock bottom's a mad story, which is what a lot of people have heard and always ask me about if they ever see me out. They're like, what is that? Is that actually true? And it was really weird. So I mentioned the counselling that never worked for me. Mm. And my mum and sister had been going to see spiritualists before like anything happened. They like loved it. And I used to come back and they were like, oh my God, it's so good. And I was like, oh, guess what happened? Your great nan spoke to you or whatever, like poo-poo. And I thought it was just like bullshit.
Yeah.
And it was only after a few years after he died, I thought to myself, do you know what? I'm going to give that a go because I can't find anything that's given me any sort of reprieve. So I booked a random session with this medium and she was like, it just 30 minutes, she put a timer on, like timer over there. She sort of banged that on and she was like, right. And she started talking to me about other, like, work, about stuff, about my sister and like something happened to my uncle and she started going on to all this stuff. And I was like, this is mad. Like she knows loads of stuff. Considering I just booked my name Matt at 7:30 or whatever, I didn't tell her who I was, my surname or anything. So she's going on a bit and I'm buying into it the whole time. I'm thinking this is like a real thing. And then towards the end, she was like, someone's standing behind you. I was like, right. And you're like a bit like, okay. And she's like, it's your great nan. I'm like, sort of course it is. Like, that's what you say to everyone.
Mm, yeah.
And she's like, she's trying to show you something. She's like pointing something at you. And I was like,
got a shudder.
I know. And then she went, it's your son. And I just burst into tears and I just went, what? And she was like, and the way she was communicating it as well was like, it sounds obviously really bad, but it felt like the biggest sense of relief I had. It was like someone had put a pin in me. I just burst with tears and with emotion and with also relief, because it sounds ridiculous, right? But when you lose a kid, you don't tuck them into bed that night. So you don't know they're all right, even though they're not here. And one of the hardest things to deal with that, I'd go to bed at night thinking, where is he? Like, is he all right? And when she said, like, he's all right, he's a reoccurring spirit, he's been here before, he'll be here again. And she really sort of trivialized it a little bit, like, and just like, he was fine, he's fine, he's being looked after up there by your great nan, and like, he wants you to know he's fine. And I just had this like almighty sense of relief. Anyway, that 30 minutes went in a shot, like, and at the end of it, she held my hand and I was obviously crying my eyes out. And she also said to her, can I come back to see you? Because, like, this is the first time I felt better. And she held my hand, she looked me in the eye and she went, darling, if we ever need to see you, we'll come to you. And I thought, that's a weird thing to say, but whatever. And I got out of there, buzzed out of there, bounced out of there and sort of got on with life. And, you know, a few years went by and it was sort of... So that was like a couple of years after he died and a couple of years before, like, from my rock bottom, because I sort of felt better a bit. And then it just deteriorated again, because once drinking drugs sort of gets hold of you, especially with that grief loaded behind it, if you don't do something like the London Marathon, you're doing the other thing. So, yeah, it wasn't enough to see me through. And then in the end, my wife just went, I've had enough. She split up with me. And I was just like, yeah, sort of whatever. And I started to lose all care for myself. And I was the only thing I had really left was my job. And I was clinging on to that. And I just had nowhere to live. No, you look again, it's the same sort of thing. You look around and you're like, what do I do? Like, do I stay with my mum? Like, I've got to pay for this house that my daughter's in. And also we'd actually had another two boys by this point. By the time we split up, very young boys, we'd had two more sons that are now 7 and 8 today. And you've got to provide for them. So you're thinking, right, well, I've got to pay for that. And also I've got to now try and find something for myself to live. Mm. And I thought, that financially isn't going to work, especially in London. So I ended up just staying at people's house. People were really kind to me that I worked with and like loosely worked with, and they had property or whatever. They were like, stay there.
But that is soulless.
Yeah.
Floating from sofa to mate's house to mate's house. You have no kind of base to plant your feet. You have no feeling of where is my home,
yeah,
your do
home.
You?
And
you're
the
not
security.
With your kids day to day. And the security.
And also, like you said, when you'd sort of done the right, like not the right thing, but you know, you'd had that life on paper that seemed like the normal path,
yeah,
like get married, have children, have a house, and then suddenly to be in that situation where you're like, I don't know, did you take a step back and think, what, this isn't my life, how's this happened?
Do you know what's really weird, and anyone who's been sort of suicidal can relate to this, is I just didn't give a fuck about anything.
You didn't?
Like a shit. I didn't care if I wake up in the morning. I was flirting with it. I'd drink and sniff and smoke and do whatever I could to try and harm myself, hoping that like this one extra drink I don't need will finish me off.
Oh, did you want to finish yourself off?
Yeah, but I didn't have the bollocks to do it like properly. So it was more just like a self-destruct, like I don't give a fuck, literally. Mm. And I was on day 3 once of it, and this is where the rock bottom come in, where I had nothing and I was literally had nowhere, and I was not even living with my kids and butts paying for it, and not even, it was like,
oh,
it was,
God,
it was pretty much as bad as it can get. And also racking up as a debt because I was having to pay for everything. And then I just thought, oh, fuck it, that's enough. So I was 3 days into like a geary session. Then I was outside a pub in Regent Street that I used to always drink at. And this guy just come out of me, like, I was having a fag with my mate Ryan, and he just came up to me, this guy out of nowhere, and he just started talking to me like really, really fast. And it, I was a bit like, what? And he held my hand, and he held this bit of paper in my hand, and he like held it tight, like held his hand on my hand, and he was talking to me really fast. He was going, you've got two sisters, you've got no brothers, you've got two sisters, you've got no brothers, you've got two sisters, you've got no brothers, and repeating loads of the same thing. And I was just like, it's really weird, but I sort of like let it happen, even though you think now, like, it's a bit weird in central London to let someone hold your hand.
Yeah.
And, you can say, get off me.
Get off me. I don't want to give you a tenner.
But
he was just, the more he was talking to me, the more he was like sucking me in. And then he started saying things like, you're close to a flower, I'm getting a flower, close to a flower, close to a flower. And he mentioned this girl, Kirsty. Well, he said Kay. He said, there's a girl, Kay. And I'd been on Tinder, like scrolling around as you do, like single in a pub, swiping right at everything.
Not very selective in those moments.
Which Kay?
And that's no reflection on Kay, by the way. We'll come on to talk about her.
Okay.
So he said, this girl, Kay, she's very good for you. She's good for you. Follow Kay, Kay, Kay. And I was thinking to myself, Kirsty, I think he's talking about. And anyway, all this stuff. And he said to me, you're a good guy. He goes, you're a star of the world. The world needs you. You're going to live till you're 96. You're going to help a lot of people. You need to stop your habits. And he was like making the gestures of like smoking and like sniffing and drinking, all these things. And I was like looking at him. And it was really weird. He goes, you stop those things, you're going to be a star. You're going to be a star. People need you. The world needs you. You've got a good personality. And I was just like thinking, And it sounds really stupid to listen to a geezer just off the street.
Yeah, but of course.
He was like, it was the first time someone had told me to stop drinking, even though I was getting smashed. No one tells you, even my parents, or no one's going to say to you, stop drinking, you've just lost your son. So he said to me, and I was like, I was obviously open to someone to fucking direct me. And the way I describe it is like, I felt like someone put me back on the track. And I've always been someone who's like, I'll do anything the best. Like, I think I rate myself at stuff. Do you know what I mean? It's why I did well in my job. It's why I'm probably doing it right now, because I do think I can do stuff well.
When you apply yourself to something,
But when in that moment, I didn't give a fuck about anything. And I thought, I didn't care whether I was good at anything. And when he said that, I was like, I am. And it's like, I felt like my energy like boost back up. And the thing he told me to do was that stop drinking. And he said, I'm going to live till 96. And he said, go and follow Kay. And then when he went, the bit of paper in my hand, I unraveled it. And it said, like, two sisters, no brother. I still don't know what that means, but it's true, because I've got two sisters and no brother. He said, flower equals Lily, and that's my daughter's name. And he said, Kay equals Kirsty. And he'd just been talking about Kay. And then I'd had a star tattooed on my wrist in, like, memory of him, like, recently, around that time. And he'd hand-drawn the star at the bottom of the paper.
No way!
And I was just like, at that moment, I was like, and then I twigged, I was like, it took me a while to twig the reality, but I was like, that's what she meant when she said, if we need you,
we'll come and find you.
Oh, got goosebumps. And what an incredible story.
It was, it's outrageous. And that moment, I was like, right, fuck this. So I rang Kay, it's now Kirsty, no, it was Kirsty, and is now my wife.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so I just literally, like, I rang her, I said, look, I'm in a bit of a bad place, can I come and stay with you for a bit? Stayed with her almost.
And what, had you just been dating her?
Yeah, seen a couple of times, like, in the West End. And then, weirdly, she lived near where my kids lived, even though we met in town. Like, they lived out about half an hour out of town. Mm-hmm. She worked right near their school, which is just a bit of a random thing that happened again.
Thanks, universe.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I went and stayed with her for a bit, and then I never left. And now, we're married, and now we've got a daughter. And for that was the start of the comeback. I didn't stop drinking overnight, because we probably spent a year sort of drinking. But she encouraged me, like, I joined a gym again, and I sort of had a bit of a base.
The self-care started to come back.
Yeah. Started to come back, and I started to take a bit of a break. I had a week off the booze, 2 weeks off the booze. And then...
Were you still doing cocaine at the time?
Yeah. I fucking loved cocaine. Like, it was my thing. I got hooked. Like, not one beer would lead to it, but it was pretty much like, at the weekend,
have a drink,
drinking.
Have a line.
And the thing is, I'd have the kids every weekend. So when I didn't have the kids, I was like, oh my God, I haven't got the kids. Like, for a weekend, and I feel all right. And I'm like, and I've got a base, and I've got a partner.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we?
Did you think you were an addict at that point? Because that, I mean, you look at that, we hear the word addict and we think that's something that you have to do it every single day. You wake up in the morning,
you have
a drink, you have a line, you know, that's the addict, right? And also you're not out on the street.
Yeah, exactly. You're sitting on a bench. Like, no, like shaking, looking a bit bedraggled. You don't always
fit the bill when it comes to the addict.
Yeah, there's a picture of an addict in your head. And if you don't fit that bill, do you actually connect the dots?
I still don't think I was an addict now.
Do you not?
No, I never put myself in that bracket because I think it just got so much like stigma, like addiction.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I've tried to rip it all up in this space and be a bit of a disruptor and go, do you know what, guys? You don't call yourself an addict. If you want to call yourself an addict, call yourself an addict. If you don't, whatever. I don't really give a fuck. Just stop drinking, have a break from it, and let's get excited about life again. Because anyone who stops drinking is going to get their zest back.
So when you stopped drinking, what was happening? You said 1 week, 2 weeks. What was happening in those breaks? Were you feeling like much better? Like what was it that kind of spurred you on to do it again?
I was getting like, I was doing a mad like stint. So I'd do like 2 weeks at one point off it. And I'd be going to the gym and I'd be going to spin classes and I'd be like, yes, I fucking feel good again. But then I was like, I'm not ready to give this up. No way. So then like, oh, maybe I wouldn't have the kids and it'd be a weekend and it'll trigger me and I'll maybe do a week or two just drinking again. And then I was like, but that enabled me to have a really good look at like what this life looked like and what that life looks like. And I'm like, I think I'm done with like the alcohol, the drug. It's taken me, like it's ruined me. It's destroyed me. And I've got no, it's not doing me any favours. Even when I was doing it at that point, I was so aware that actually when I'd come out of a spin class, and I've slept well, and I'm eating better food, I feel really good. And when I'm doing this, I'm just like, yeah, it feels good for the first drink or the first line. But 5 hours later, and then when you wake up in the morning or you wake up at 3 a.m, all your problems are amplified and you need a piss and you need a drink and you feel like shit, that isn't worth it. And it was just happened that, obviously, I was stuck in this life in the West End because like I was surrounded by all the glitz and glamour that I wanted. That was what I wanted. So then COVID came around. Which is when I was taking, so January, February, I was taking the breaks and I was like, okay, I'm exploring this world of sobriety, but I'm not sure I'm ready for it. And then lockdown happened. So I was furloughed and I was like, right. So the bars shut. Everyone I'd hung around with was not with me anymore. And I was plotted up indoors and I thought, right, this could go either way. And which it did. And for the first few weeks, I was like, oh, sweet, fucking drinking in the day. Everyone's drinking in the day.
Because I was going to say, it could go one way or the other.
Yeah, and it did. And I thought, actually, no, this is my chance. So it took me a couple of weeks of lockdown. And I was like, no, fuck it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to go for it. And I stopped on the 20th or 21st of April. I don't remember anymore because I just don't count the days. I got to 1,000 days and I just stopped counting. So I thought, I don't want to be like, again, that addiction people like, they go to AA and they talk about them. I'm an alcoholic. I don't want to be like that myself. No. And I respect
what stops
it. I don't want to be
from
like,
being like that?
Because I fucking want to look forward and get excited. I don't want to look backwards and say, I did this some 400,000 days ago. I was doing this. I don't give a shit about that. I want to go forward.
Do you not want it to be your identity?
No.
Like the addict identity?
Yeah, because like I said, I'm now at a place where I think early on I was a bit worried like about, you know, people around me going to find out that I drunk and did drugs and that. I don't know, I just thought, I lost everything and I've got such a low point. I was like, fuck it, fuck everything. Like, I'm just going to do what I want to do. And I'd gone from a profession where you sort of essentially take money off people to now a profession where I get up and I meet people at you and I do this for a living and I help people and I've got phone calls to people that are struggling and I just talk to them and I run seminars and Zoom calls and masterclasses and lads groups and we do things like go and climb mountains and run marathons and ultra marathons and like,
It's amazing. It's amazing. I'm really interested to kind of delve a little bit deeper into this word addict, because I think
that's quite,
you know, we are busy mums, you know, lots of people in our circles come home, they'll have a glass of wine, which leads on to a bottle of wine, and we've normalised that habitual drinking at home. We have had not so smug now, Kat Sims has been on. She's amazing.
Yeah, we love Kat.
A dear friend of ours, and you know, she maybe would say she was addicted to alcohol, but at a certain point she just went, this is not what I want for my life. I'm losing days the next day. Why am I drinking in the middle of the week?
Yeah.
Why am I drinking around the kids? I was blacking out, all this kind of stuff. So label it as what you want, but alcohol, as you put it, destroys everything.
Yeah.
The cycle of doom, do you call it?
Yes.
I've done my research, man.
Well done.
Yeah. Done my research.
It's so interesting because Zoe and I will maybe talk. I don't know if I can really delve into my experience with alcohol, not personally, but somebody in my family. And I was talking about it last night, and I feel quite tearful. I was talking about it last night, and I watched that video with my mum, and it really hit home.
Which video, sorry?
The one where you said alcohol destroys everything.
Mm.
And it does.
Yeah, it does. And the thing with it is it's slow. It's slow, and you don't notice it's happening. Like, the person doesn't know it's happening.
Yeah.
So you think, oh, I got away with that last night. I managed to get 5 hours sleep. I feel half decent.
Yeah.
I've not offended anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you see the state, like, that adds up, and that compound effect is massive. And likewise, by the way, you can reverse all the damage it does if you stop drinking. And that's what I get excited by.
Yeah.
We've had people, and I had my own tests done when I stopped drinking versus now. I'm flying. Like, I am rolling back the years, but that would have gone the other way. It's literally a T-junction of life. You can go that way or that way, and that way's going to really fuck you up, by the way.
Yeah.
And that way's going to make you the best life you can ever have. But the thing is, people still go for the easy option, still go for the booze, because it's got such a powerful hold on people.
It's such a big topic of conversation in our house at the moment because, and I've spoken about this on the pod before, Georgia and I talk about it because of her situation and mine, but I'm married to an ex-rugby player, and when he was playing rugby, it was all binge culture, going out at the weekends after a game, knocking back 20 pints.
It's glamorised.
Like idiots. They would get into fights. They would do X, Y, and Z. But then it's fine because they would wake up on Monday morning and they'd go into training, and then they'd train and train and train and then fall off. Now, my husband retired 4 years ago, and he has had a massive issue with alcohol. Like as in he's sober at the moment. We talk about it constantly, where he's either not sober and then he acts the way that he acts and does what he does, which isn't particularly pleasant. And then he wakes up and fucking hates himself the next day. And, you know, I'll lose him. We don't get him. Me and the kids don't get him as a father the next day. He's lounging around on the sofa or he's in bed pulling the duvet up. And then we're like, then he's back on the sobriety. Right, I'm going to do it. Then he falls off again. Now, I don't consider him to be an addict, but he has been battling his demons for a really long time. He's now 17 days into a 75 days hard. And it's the happiest that we have been as a couple.
Mm.
There's no arguments.
Yeah.
There's no losing days. We're going for bike rides as families. You know, he is present. His work is flying. And I'm like, yes.
What stops people? Why do people go back?
Well, this is what I'm frightened about, George.
I can't, my sort of issue with alcohol, obviously it's not me, but in my family, it's frustrating. I cannot get my head around it. I'm like, you see what it does to a person, and you see them between the hours of 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. and they are one person, a great person, everything going for them. And around those hours, there's someone that you don't want to be in a room with.
Yeah.
And then the next day as well, like, when you said alcohol destroys everything, you look at all of that person's problems, like anxiety, you know, health, everything, even like mobility, it's that kind of thing. And you're like, if you fixed this one thing, all of that
would go away.
Why can you not do it, and why can you not see it?
Yeah, because that's what I do. Like, so I can tell you all the answers, but we'd be here all day. One of the biggest things I find is that if you asked whoever that person is, like, what they're excited about this year, what their goals are for the end of the year, like, what's driving them forward? That, like, 100 times out of 100, they won't have
it. They
won't have it. Like, I don't know. That's been something I've learned by coaching so many people over time, right? So what I do a lot of now is about getting people excited. And that's why, going back to my January point, I was talking about well, I get so excited about January, and I get people to get excited about January, and I'm like, where do you want to be? And I do visualization exercise with them. Mm. And I say, like, where, like, you've got a blank canvas. If you stop drinking, you can do whatever you want to do. So create that vision for themselves and then pulls them forward, gets them out of bed to do some things. If they've got nothing to get forward, like, get excited about, then they're going to get excited about the thing they've always got excited about, which is the booze at the end of the day. And also they've got these like neural pathways in your brain, which are just so trenched. They're so deep with what you've always done. And by the way, what your parents always did.
Yeah.
If that's through your influence, then what else do you know? You don't know anything else. So it's hard enough like to get people to change.
Celebrate alcohol, commiserate alcohol, boredom. Alcohol. That's
sex,
the thing, isn't it?
Alcohol. My particular favourite.
It's interesting you say about...
You should try it out. It's much better.
Oh, shit, that's where I've been going wrong.
You know, like you say about changing, you know, like changing the cycle, it's put me off booze. Like, massively.
Yeah, me too. I feel
like,
anxious.
Massively put me off booze watching somebody else. Like, and... Is that like, I mean, maybe that's been a really good thing, and maybe that's why it's meant to have happened. I don't know. Maybe it saved me from being a big boozer.
But your frustrations come in because you're not that way inclined. I get the impression with you, you're not like stuck in that trap.
No, I'm not. No. Not
so
sure.
That you're, of course, you're getting frustrated by it because you can't understand it.
No.
But I think this is where you've got to almost like people are different, and you've got to sort of almost understand it first. To then go, right, how can I help you? Because you got, let me tell you something, you've got no chance of helping them by telling them to stop drinking or you're upsetting them, because they don't give a shit.
I know.
They need to help themselves. And in order to help themselves, they need to start to get excited about what life could be like. And because they just give up. You just like think, oh, fuck it, I'm getting old. This is my life now. Yeah. Plotted up, Netflix, whatever. And people just
slippers
give up.
On.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
it.
They just give up, don't they?
They say they die, what is it, you die when you're 25, buried when you're 75. That's a lot of people's life.
What?
If it's true, isn't it? Like most people die by the time they're 25 or 35 and
die inside, yeah.
Because
yeah,
they're like, fuck it, I can't do anything. I'm more useless. Like, this is the thing. When we're kids, we lie in bed and we get excited about what we're going to be, footballer, radio presenter, a TV presenter, whatever. Yeah. And then you go to, you get your first job and you earn £6 an hour and you're like, oh, that's good, I've got my own money. And then you get a promotion to a supervisor and you get £8 an hour. That's cha-ching. And then suddenly you've worked you up a stupid ladder and your ladder's up against the wrong wall. And then by the time you've done that, you forget about being a princess or a Disney princess or a TV presenter because I'm working a clothes shop, and like, oh well, who was I to dream that? And then you just give up,
and then you just focus on, you know, it's then like all of your dreams suddenly you're looking at in the bottom of a beer bottle, and then there's nothing outside of it. Like you've mentioned marathons and challenges and all this amazing stuff that you're discovering in the universe, right? So it's like a new life is born.
And also, when I've said to myself, this is how mad it is, when I get to 70, I want to be running marathons, I want to be climbing mountains, I want to do something fucking mad, like swim the channel when I'm 70. Why not?
Yeah, why not?
What's stopping me? And actually, what was stopping me before was holding me so tight for so long, I feel like it's like I've burst the fucking seam. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, right, you fuckers. I haven't taken it. I nearly dropped a C-bomb then. I was getting really excited.
No C-bombs on the podcast.
Yeah, no, that is too far.
but yeah, that's what I feel like now. I'm like, yeah, I can do it. I can do anything. And, that, you know, I've come out. I posted a reel last night on my Instagram, and I said, because I came out of my skiing lesson, and I was so excited because... I'm 36 years old, I stopped drinking. I'm 40 years old now. And in that 4 years, I've done so much with my life. I'm learning stuff. I'm learning how to speak Spanish. I'm learning how to ski. I've written a book that's a bestseller. I didn't even get any good grades in English, but I'm doing it. You know, I've built a decent Instagram follower. I've built two businesses. I've started my own app. Like, I'm just getting warmed up. I'm not even feel like I've remotely got out of bed yet. I'm like, just getting started.
Are you a better dad?
Oh, beyond better dad. And I'm fortunate enough that my boys are 7 and 8, so they didn't know me really drinking because I've not drunk for 4 years, and they were only like 3 and 4 whatever. And my daughter's obviously 18 months, my youngest, and my oldest is mature enough to sort of see what she was around for the whole event, so she's very good and she knows what's going on.
What's her, I mean, she's not 18, she's 15.
Yeah.
What do you think her relationship will be like with alcohol?
I can already tell she's not like interested.
Mm.
Yeah, she's not. And 15-year-olds these days aren't like us at 15.
No,
we were trying to find the pills and the fucking MDMA. It's like, not going to find that in your parents' whiskey cupboard.
Yeah, exactly.
It did look though.
Exactly. So now I'm like, I did worry when she got to 15. I was thinking, what's she going to be like? But she's got such a wise head on her shoulder. I think it's done her some good in many ways to see the whole. And obviously, she's seen me go public. You know, her friends follow me and I talk about stuff like this that they listen to, and I've been in the paper and I've been on radio. So like, I am in the public talking about this stuff publicly. So she's had to sort of know it all. She read my book, and that was like probably the first, because in that I do explain sort of everything. And at that point I knew I had to sort of tell her the whole story. So she,
Would you tell, like, so say she goes to a party, she's 16, she has a drink. Would you be cross?
No, not at all.
No. So do you think that you can have alcohol in your life and it not be a problem?
So that was my next question. That, you've asked it. Yeah. Because there's obviously people that, you know, like to have a drink, can handle it the next day, can get on with it, and it's not, you know, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Case in point, because I'm perfect. No, I don't have a problem with it. I can pick it up and put it down. I don't drink during the week. I love having a drink at a party. And if I've got a hangover, I just get up and get on with it.
Yeah, exactly. And there's people are in.
You're the same.
Yeah. I mean, I like a glass of champagne or two glasses of champagne.
Bougie.
And that is, but it's because it's the only drink this person in my life doesn't drink. Subconsciously, that I don't know why, but me and my mum were talking about it and I was like, that's all I drink. And she was like, well, that's all this person doesn't drink. That's really interesting.
No, I love that. This is where I'm different as well to the addict.
Yeah.
I love alcohol. I love drugs. Like, I fucking love it all. And, you know, maybe I've actually, the weird thing, the way to, I've sold it to myself, right? Because I couldn't cope with, I'm not drinking forever. So I said to myself at the start, I'm not going to drink for 10 years. And in that 10 years, I'm going to rebuild a life for myself that's going to be incredibly successful. I'm going to help literally millions of people. I'm going to travel the world. I'm going to challenge myself physically. I'm going to do all this stuff in 10 years. And if at 10 years' time, which is now 6 years' time, I might go and get smashed, or I might go and move to a vineyard in Spain and tuck myself away forever. Who knows? That was my incentive, and that was enough for me in my mind to be able to go and do it. And now, as that time goes on, I'm not sure that will happen because I've got used to this life and it's brilliant, and I can't see myself going back. But I'm still there, and I still use that sometimes. No, it's all right. You can drink again. Because I think that if I said to myself, right, give up the booze, you can never drink again, I would last 5 minutes.
I know. Well, I was going to say
so
that.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, because someone tells you can't do something, all you want to do is go and do that thing. Well, I do anyway.
And like you say, you've got that thing in your head of it's not forever. It's just for a year. It's just for 2 years. It's just, and then it just keeps going and going and going. And I think that's a really interesting way to look at it because, you know, you mentioned about going to AA and people say, you know, I'm an addict, I'm an alcoholic. And it's very much, once you do that, that's it. There is no going back. But maybe for some people, having the option in their mind to go back.
Yeah.
Keeps you on the straight and narrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I tell people. Because people say to me, I spent the last 10 years sort of flirting with the idea of going sober. I'm like, why don't you spend the next 10 years going sober and then just worry about it after that.
With the idea of going back.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
For anybody listening, Matt, that is thinking about cutting out alcohol, you know, we hear things all the time about if you want to be more sustainable, you know, maybe cut meat out once a week or, you know, do X, Y, and Z. But for drinking, how does somebody listening start?
Well, it's never been a better time, put it that way. I think because there's so much information available. And one example of that is, just quickly, is sleep. Like, alcohol destroys your sleep. Any level of alcohol destroys your sleep. The more alcohol you have, the more it destroys it, but it always destroys it. So I think that's one thing. With people wearing Whoops and wearables, they're actually getting to see their heart rate variability drop. They're getting to see their heart rate, their resting heart rate is going from 45 to 55, which means they go out for a jog in the morning. People have fallen over and dropped dead because they've been drinking too much and they're going out running, trying to run it off, and they're running like they were. So your husband, this is where it happens in, there's a lot of public cases about this, where professional athletes obviously train for a living and they get to 40, they retire and they go boozing, and then they still go running like they were 35 because they're professionals.
Killing themselves in the gym.
And then they fall over and die. And you're like, okay, this is happening a lot. And it's something that I'm quite passionate about and trying to raise awareness for it. But going back to your point and your question is how people start is that you can go places like we are now. There's alcohol-free drinks everywhere. And I'd encourage anyone, don't overthink it. Don't think I'm going to go sober for a month or whatever. Just have an alcohol-free beer.
We're not in a bar, by the way. We're in a studio.
It's a kind of like...
No.
But yeah, alcohol-free beers, for example, and whether you're a beer drinker or not, a lot of women these days are drinking them because they're so good. And I think if you fancy a beer on a Thursday night, just say to yourself, this Thursday. Exactly. Yeah, shout out Lucky Saint. Say to yourself, I'm going to have it. And make a big deal out of it. This is what I say to people. Why don't you say to yourself, this weekend, I'm going to go to a generic supermarket. By the way, there's loads of them that sell them. Go and invest 20 quid and go and buy a bottle of that, like a little can of that, and just get a nice glass, get some nice ice, and just make it a bit of fun and say, on a Saturday night, we're going to do this. We're going to make some non-alcoholic cocktails and just do it for one night because I guarantee you'll love it and I guarantee you'll get a bit of a placebo from it. And I guarantee the next morning, you'll be like, that was actually all right. And then it might be that, and I encourage people to, like, Monday to Friday, just drink non-alcoholic beers. A lot of my mates have done that now. They don't drink Monday to Friday. They just drink Saturday. And I'm like, that's much better than drinking Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah. And you know what as well, like in social settings, I think it's one of those things where if one person says, oh, I'll have a Corona Zero, then the other person goes, oh, actually, yeah, do you know fine. What? I will as well. Yeah. And it's that, it just takes one person to like change the narrative.
Yeah.
Like in our, like we've made some like a new couple friends. Well, I said no. It's a couple of years, two years in. Friends. And the guy from the day we met him has only ever had alcohol-free beer. We've never asked him why. Like
maybe he follows a better life.
Maybe he does. But we've never asked him why. And since then, all of the rest of us have all cut back on what we drink when we go out. And it's mad because it's mostly, it's just the social norm of having alcohol.
Imagine if there's a couple and you and your couple and three out of the four people were not drinking. Imagine what you would feel like drinking on your own. Okay. Like that's what I always think. Because you'd feel
it's not fun, is it?
No, you'd feel all the consciousness, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it's going to be my first Friday this Friday for a couple of years not drinking. Because Doz was doing it, obviously. And normally on a Friday night, we'd have a little thing in our kitchen, have a little dance around, get the kids to bed. Not doing it this Friday. I'm already feeling like I've booked a gym class in for Saturday morning for 8 a.m.
I'm going to do it.
And then it'll be 2 weeks off the booze for me, unconsciously. But I'm quite excited about it. We're doing a bike ride on Sunday. So I think those little changes for anybody listening that's thinking, do you know what? Maybe I'm just going to cut out my midweek drinking or I'm going to take away my Saturday. Whatever it is, do it and see what happens. Yeah. I think maybe that's
And it doesn't have to be today. All or nothing to
doesn't
begin
have to
with.
Be all or nothing.
Doesn't, know, but and also get excited about it. Get ready to get excited about your life because you don't know what's ahead. Like I describe it as like if you live in like a tin and you take on the roof off and you suddenly see the stars. It's that extreme. Like you're like, oh my god, I can actually hang on a minute. I'm making progress in every area of your life.
Yeah.
And we're so good at doing things. If we go on a diet, we reduce our calories, we lose weight. If we go to the gym and we build muscle, we do it consistently, we build muscle. Like if you do running, you never run before, you run 1K tomorrow, you run 3K the next day, you build it up, you're consistent, you do something well, you stop drinking and everything gets better. Like there's not what it's a hack. Because then every single thing apart, there's not a downside to it.
There is no downside, exactly.
It's inspiring stuff.
It is, but do you know what? It really inspires me. I don't think it's actually going to take me much to not drink.
And also, just don't be a mug. It's muggy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Look at the world. Everyone's drunk. Everyone's upset. Everyone's depressed. Everyone's on pills. And I'm like, if everyone just stopped drinking, right, we wouldn't be able to solve all of it by any means, but we'd solve a lot of it. People just get out running, get outdoors, like do something with your life. Stop. People literally work in boxes, drive around in boxes, sleep in boxes, and then get buried in a fucking box. If you want to be that person, like everyone else, go and be that person. Or break the norm. Go and do something. Look in the pub window and think, I don't want to be like that, rather than I want to go in there.
Oh. Like,
change the mindset.
Matt Pink for PM.
Oh my God, I know.
Anybody listening that wants to get involved, download Dry app now. Of course, you can follow Matt on Instagram as well. Better Life Guy.
Well, you tell me, Zoe. You followed me, didn't you?
Better Life Guy.
Better underscore life underscore guy. By the way, the Dry app's got two Y's, DRYY app. It's free to download from anywhere.
Okay, amazing. We always like to ask our guests their favourite parenting products. Give them to us.
Okay. How many do I have to tell you?
Well, just
a few.
An amount.
Your absolute go-tos.
Oh, God. I've had so many kids.
I was just going to say that.
I've seen a breadth of things. Like, I've had every single buggy you could imagine. But off the top of my head, the buggy we've got now is the best one we've ever had. If you're in London or a city, you'll know it.
Go on.
The yo-yo.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Baby's in yo-yo.
Yeah. It's just a winner, isn't it?
Yeah.
Bus, tube, plane, over the arm. That's probably the best thing we've done the best thing we've had so far. The snooze pod. The snooze pod is a favourite. What do you call it? Thing that sleeps next to your bed.
Yeah, is
next
that
to me.
Is that next to me crib thing?
Well, it's called SNUZ.
Yeah,
right?
it's really cool. It looks wicked as well.
Yeah,
but I suppose it's a bit of a. It links to what we've been talking about, but the owlet is the thing that obviously you track the baby's heart rate.
Oh
and
yeah,
stuff.
So yeah.
They wear a little sock, and when after. What happened to my son with the other kids we had? We only had that. There was only that didn't exist. There was that thing you put under the mattress.
The mat. Like
a mat.
We had that.
Which by the way, they roll off and it like shits you up because the alarm goes off.
Yeah, I know.
But now, like with Kiki, who's our youngest, she has a little owlet sock, which you've got the app on the phone and stuff. So, that's probably my number one in terms of like everything. Because actually, you can see on the camera, you can see everything about all the information about her. And I'd say it's expensive, but it's worth it. For someone like me, definitely it's worth
everything. And reliable. It's brilliant.
It's brilliant. And the sock up, the bigger size sock when they get a bit older. And
love that. Yeah.
Brilliant. Love that. And I mean, gosh, I've taken so much advice from this podcast already. But if you could give one piece of advice to another parent or a new parent, what would it be?
So since I've stopped drinking, my parenting's completely changed. And what I've learned through my own knowledge, really, and courses I've been on, is like to see their map of the world. So if you look at the way we think, so this podcast this morning was 50% of my brain space. That's what it's taken up, if you like. Mm-hmm. In their map of the world, if they want to show you their colouring they've done at school, I think I see so many parents that go, yeah, oh, nice, yeah. And I used to be like that. And now I see in their map of the world, that's 100% of what his attention is. Mm-hmm. Is he wants you to see his picture. And rather than just poo-pooing it because you're busy doing something else, like, I just love getting down on like the same level as them and like asking them a bit of questions about the thing they're trying to show me rather than just casting it off.
Yeah.
So I just say, a map of the world, their map of the world is so important, and don't ever think that because you're busy putting the shopping away, you should.
That's more important.
It's not.
That's really good advice.
Love that. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Matt, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Loved it. Oh, thank you.
Well, bravo, Matt Pink. What a superstar. What a complete legend. And what a total inspiration as well.
Yeah, I know. I mean, do you know what I found quite funny? And actually, it is a really new, like, perspective on talking about like alcohol abuse is the fact that in his mind, rather than saying I'm never going to drink again, that's it, in his mind again, he keeps himself going by thinking one day I'm going to go and live by a vineyard and I'm going to drink again. I just found that really interesting because it's not a one size fits all approach for everybody, and it was really refreshing to hear somebody talk about it in, you know, a completely different
their own way.
Yeah.
Their own way.
And I love that.
That's the thing with drinking though, because everybody has a different relationship to it. I think there's a very old school way of looking at alcohol, in as much that you're either on the wagon or you're off the wagon. You hear people saying it.
Yeah.
So it's like you're either not drinking or you're drinking, and when you're drinking, you're getting shit faced and, you know, getting random drinking injuries. And when you're not drinking, you're sort of doing breath work and yoga every day and you can never have another drink.
Yeah.
But how about that? Like Matt, like you said, Matt had a really interesting view on it, that currently he's not drinking and that gives him this and this, but there might be one day where he can have a glass of wine and chooses to. And I sometimes think about my own relationship with alcohol and what, like, I call it my gateway drug, because, you know, if I have a glass of wine, I tend to think, I tell you what, I really want to have a cigarette, because I was a smoker, and then I had to fight against that, and then I think, I'm fighting, and then suddenly all my, you know, I am an addictive person. I have got that addictive side to my relation, my personality, but I've really figured out that day to day, I'm not a drinker. I would never drink in the week. You know, if I want to go out on a Friday night like we did on Friday night and have a few drinks and stay up till 1 o'clock in the morning, I don't get shit-faced, but I have a really good time. I can do that now. It's taken me a long time to get to that place. And that's okay.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I'm similar to that, Zoe. And I think I've been, you know, like a social drinker for like a lot of years, where I would drink like a lot. And I'm kind of, I don't know if it's because of what's been going on, like, my family, but I'm kind of really coming away from it now, and I don't actually know how much longer I'm going to drink for, which is weird, because the more, like, I went out on Saturday night, we went for dinner in London, James and I, and with some friends, and I had maybe like 3 glasses of champagne, so not loads, and it was over dinner.
But then
I thought, I don't know if I like this anymore. And it's weird, like, how that, but that might just be for now. Like, that might just be a now thing, and then in 2 years' time, I might not feel that way anymore. I just think it's a fun,
Do you get anxiety the next day?
I don't, because I don't drink that much too, but I used to. I used to feel like that feeling is the worst feeling in the world. That, oh gosh, don't. And I just, there's so, like, I don't know. I think when you're having a good time with alcohol, it's great. And I've had loads of good times with alcohol. And I really enjoy champagne. I really enjoy like drinking with friends. You know what I mean? There are so many things I really enjoy about it. But I think when it's starting to not really work for you anymore, I think that's when you have to like question it.
It's interesting. Still figuring it out.
Yeah. So listen, we're here for you guys.
That's a big one, wasn't it?
If you guys are still figuring it out, that's absolutely fine too. And of course, yeah. You know, thank you for listening to today's podcast. As always, they are for you. Please give our podcast a little follow. You can also rate, review and subscribe to it so that you never miss an episode.
Yeah, and any feedback, like any guests you'd like to hear from, like let us know what you thought of this episode, because we're actually talking to no one right now, so it's sometimes nice to get a little bit of feedback. Just drop us a DM. We're on Instagram at Made by Mamas, and we'll be back on Friday.
Made by Mamas is an Insanity podcast production, and today's episode was produced by the lovely Charlotte Mason.
Insanity Group.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.